Welcome to the Be Kind Podcast with your host, Joe Kirchner, presented by the Animal Advocates of South Central Pennsylvania.
Welcome, everybody, to the Be Kind Podcast. We're part of the Animal Advocates' mission to create a more compassionate and loving world for all living creatures, which includes cows. If you've never had a chance to see a cow in person, highly recommend you go see one at one of our local farmed animal sanctuaries, like here with us, Lancaster Farm Sanctuary, or any other sanctuary near you. Because I don't know about you, but I see a lot of cows when I'm driving around, and I always feel very bad for them. So I always like to channel some love out towards those cows anytime I see them. So loving world includes cows. Love cows. And I'm Joe Kirchner, the president of the Animal Advocates of South Central PA. And today I am joined by Mandy again, and also John, who's a...
I'm over here in the corner. I'm in trouble, so I'm in the corner now.
John is on the board for the Animal Advocates of South Central PA. And today we have the distinct pleasure of being joined by Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hey, Joe. Hey, Mandy. How you doing?
I'm great.
How you doing, John?
So we're in person at the Casa de Joe and Mandy today, and Mary is here to talk to us a little bit about her vegan journey, what she's been up to, and just offer some insights into veganism for anybody listening. So Mary, a good way to, we like to get started just talking about how you became vegan and how that's been like for you.
It was a difficult transition to be vegan. The transition from vegetarianism to being a vegan, it took many years. I wanted to be vegan, but it was hard for me to give up the food that I was used to eating. So inside me, there was this little conflict going on with knowing, you know, the realities of where dairy comes from and not being accepting of that. That was troubling to me, and I didn't want to support that. And on the other hand, it just took me several years to get to the point where I could stop consuming dairy. So it was a process.
How long ago was this?
I'm guessing it was like the early 2000s, something, you know, 2004 or 5, when I finally was able to get going on veganism and not look back.
And when did you become, would you say you stopped eating meat, Mary?
I didn't eat meat most of my adult life, actually.
Mm, yeah. Interesting.
And for anyone who's listening out there, they might be going through similar challenges. What were some ways that you overcame those hurdles and went fully vegan?
That's a great question, Joe. I guess I just kept giving myself another chance. Yeah, just kind of forgiving myself and getting ready to try again. I mean, I did that a lot. You know, didn't just go down the route of saying that I can't do it or that I just won't do it. So I guess just giving myself another chance was part of it. One thing that helped me is my daughter, I raised her vegetarian. None of my kids ate meat. One day she came home from college and she told me, she said, "Mom, you think you're so cool, but do you know all this stuff about dairy and blah, blah, blah?" And, I thought, oh, no. And so having somebody, really, she did. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like, I mean, young kids... A lot of them go through this time of life when they think they know everything, they know it all.
Freshman year of college, that right. happens a lot.
Right. Anyways, but she did know. I mean, she did have an excellent point. And so having a nagging family member was really helpful. That's not under anybody's personal control, of course, but it was really helpful to have somebody else, you know, who I knew was going to be out there reminding me of what was going on behind the scenes with the whole dairy industry.
That's something that we've discovered is one of the most effective ways to help people become vegan or stay vegan is just spending time with other people who are vegan.
Yep.
As the other day we went out for dinner. We all went out for dinner, actually. Mm-hmm. And we just looked around the table and it's a group of vegans, and we don't really think anything of it, but I would never want to turn my back on my friends or disappoint them or anything like that. So that's why not being vegan never crosses my mind, just because all my friends are vegan too. So it's very easy to just make that a regular part of your life. It's kind of the opposite when anyone has a substance abuse issue. Maybe all your friends drink a lot or do drugs, and it's just kind of part of your life, and you hang out with them, so they're going to keep doing it to keep having your friends. It's almost the opposite side of that coin, where your friends have this positive influence on your life to help you live by your morals and values and create a more compassionate world. So I think, yeah, spot on, having people in your life who are vegan and think along the same lines you do is Mm-hmm. A very effective way to get over some of those hurdles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mary, your story resonates with me. I had a difficult transition from being vegetarian to being vegan, and one of the last hurdles for me was the societal thing. So anytime I would go out with my friends, I did not have a lot of vegan friends until I started dating Joe. When my friends would get nachos at the bar at 10 o'clock at night, how are you, you're going to just pick around the cheese? So when those things, you know, finally I'm like, I can't keep doing this. Didn't help that my friend would get sick every time from between the beer and the nachos. So I'm like, hey, maybe there is something. Maybe we've got to cut this out. But once you draw a line in the sand and tell all of your friends, it's always helpful for me. My family and I went vegan together, and I found that to be very helpful.
Yes. Oh, that's awesome.
To get it all out, kind of all out of the house at once is great.
Wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Who else in your family is vegan, Mary?
Well, my two sons who are vegetarian and my daughter is vegan. We never ate meat. The kids never ate meat when they were growing up. I mean, some of them, I'm sure, ate meat at school and stuff, like, but not in my house.
So do they live around here or anything? Do they ever come to any of the gatherings?
No, that's what, see, because I forced them not to eat meat, now they're gone. I'm joking. I have lots of extended family up in New England. I was born in New England. Their father was born in New England. And so they have lots of relatives in New England. My sons, when they graduated from high school, they got really great jobs up there. So they're up there being vegetarians. And my daughter's in New York City.
And that's pretty much a vegan mecca.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have
yeah.
tons of restaurants there.
They do.
What area in New England? Like Massachusetts? Or
One son's in Connecticut and one son's in Vermont.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if your children were vegetarian their whole lives, that was staying the obvious quite a long time. How was mm-hmm. it raising them vegetarian back when there weren't quite so many options for plant-based diets?
I never saw it as a real hardship, actually. You know, I mean, I knew that there were lots of foods they could eat. Actually, my mischievous husband would sometimes buy them meat. He was not vegetarian. Mm. He didn't ever criticize my vegetarian ways at all. He was at complete peace with that. He couldn't pull that off. And when he was away from the house, I mean, he was in the military. He traveled all over the world. He ate, I mean, there were military foods that were packed for him, and he ate what was packed for him. But when he was home, he was completely respectful of that I had a vegetarian kitchen, and that's how we lived.
And we just talked about dating in the world of veganism on the last episode. And we talked about some of the challenges of being in relationships with people who may not be vegetarian or vegan if you are. But that was just a perfect example how you can work and people can still be very much in love and do great things and have mm-hmm. fantastic relationships, even if they do differ on their dietary choices or things like that. Every relationship's different. Every person's different. So it's just finding a way that makes it work for you and your unique situation.
Good point. Yeah. Yeah. And different couples will create different solutions and live out different solutions. Try them out. Yeah.
So you're a volunteer with the Animal Advocates, and you've been a great help at a lot of events. How did you first get connected with the Animal Advocates?
I must have gotten to know people at one of your tables, I'm guessing. I had worked with Lancaster Farm Sanctuary, just doing, you know, cleaning barns and stuff like that. And I'm thinking that I bumped into you all, you know, at one of the Lancaster Farm Sanctuary events or something. And I just thought, well, it was John. I thought he was like a ray of sunshine. I thought, I want to be around that guy. I mean, that's how it began. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you were at Lancaster Farm Sanctuary, and I think you saw us there, and you learned more about what we were doing, and you probably ended up on our website, and that's mm-hmm. how you ended up coming to our stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how's that experience been for you so far as
great.
A volunteer?
Great. I'm thrilled. I'm just thrilled about it. I believe in this message, and I feel very happy that I can make part of my life. You know, I can spend some time doing this is the most meaningful cause in my world. So if I can do a little outreach, you know, for people, wow, if just to invite them to consider just the taking the first steps away from violence toward animals. That means everything to me.
Joe, you often say that those volunteer days at animal sanctuaries can be a gateway to people seeing what animals, how they live every day, where they mm-hmm. might have been rescued from, learning their backstory. So, mm-hmm. yeah, taking that first step to, hey, let's go with Mary for a volunteer day is a good way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe instead of forcing a plate of food on them that they're dubious about, seeing animals in real life and mm-hmm. helping to take care of them. People often, it's hard to, you know, shirk away from a cute goat baying, things like that.
Yeah, it's very mind-blowing to people where they see the alternative lives animals can live. Most people just think of animals as their lives on a farm. So when you do get out to a sanctuary and you see a cow that's just living life like a cow wants to live without having to be sent into a dairy pen or anything else, I don't want to get too graphic. But seeing that, yeah, animals can just live to be happy. They're not necessarily here for us to exploit. And we're very grateful that you found us and you're now volunteering, Mary, because Mandy mentioned this the other day when we were at dinner, that we had such a diverse group of people there. We had people who are 30 years old to people who were
75 in my case.
75 years old there. And that's why it's so great having people like you volunteer, because then we have a nice diverse range of ages and viewpoints and things like that. So if somebody comes up to our table at a Go Green in the City at our Lancaster Veg Fest, who's not 32, who's older than 32, someone like you would be there with the experience and insight. They could see themselves in you and say, hey, here's someone else who went vegan later in life, who's been vegan for a while, who's around my age. If she can do it, I can do it too. Not to minimize mm-hmm. what you did, but when you yep. see other people accomplish things, it opens up that door that, yes, this is something you can do too. So the more diverse people, more different ages, backgrounds, anything, any dimension of diversity, if you are, is very much welcome in the volunteer world and the vegan movement to help open that door for more and more people from different backgrounds.
You know, I think, Joe, when you said that, it reminded me that I think before we had the Lancaster Farm Sanctuary, two of the women who started Soul Fest in Baltimore, one of those two came up here and gave a talk at the Ware Center. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, I remember that talk. They're food justice activists, you know, so they're working on, they're both Black.
Mm-hmm.
They are working on, can't recall their names, of course.
Nyjah Brown?
Yes.
Yes. There's Nyjah, and I can't remember the other lady's name.
You're right. That's one. Yes. But yeah, she was the one that came up, too, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, she is very sweet. And she owns Land of Kush, the Baltimore vegan soul food place.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Oh, I just was blown away by them. And I wonder if the energy she brought up here when she gave that talk, if that, we didn't have the Lancaster, I know the farm sanctuary wasn't here yet, but I think that they spearheaded, you know, that kind of energy during that talk, that in this community. I was so impressed with them. And just speaking of diversity, I mean, their issues are, you know, the fact that the African American community doesn't have all the healthy choices of food to eat that middle class white people do. What are the, you know, racial causes of that? So they work on food justice and food equality and veganism. And I think that that's just such a natural connection between all of those issues. And when I go to the Veg Fest, you just see all different people from all different cultures and belief systems, and they're all there together peaceably. It's wonderful.
You made a great point that having the ability to go vegan is very much a privilege in today's world, where you need to have access to certain resources, certain foods, certain stores and businesses in your area to really to make it a healthy and feasible transition in your life. And a lot of people from backgrounds where they don't have access to those resources, whether in a food desert, don't have the finances, mm-hmm. don't have the time, resources, or things like that. We can say, oh, it's not that bad. It's really cheap. You can just have rice and beans, blah, blah, blah. But if you don't have the time to cook rice and beans all the time, or maybe your culture doesn't let you do that or anything like that, it's not going to be an option for you. So when we do things like advocate for other social justice movements, like to address racial disparities, elevate people from low-income backgrounds and things like that, that gives them more capacity and more resources to go out and then potentially go and pursue a vegan lifestyle as well. So really, anytime you advocate for social justice or equity in any way, shape, or form, you're doing your part to make the world closer to a vegan world. Because before we get those things in line, get those people out of it, it's going to be very hard for them to go and have a widespread adoption of a vegan diet. And power to anyone who's out there doing that now in any of those kind of situations. I personally, people say it's easy to go vegan, which it is, but it's still not easy for everybody. So everyone's story is different. So anyone who's vegan out there, thank you. And anyone who's advocating for any social justice or equity-based movement out there, thank you as well.
You're right. And, you know, there's so many food deserts in America, and it's almost always in urban areas. It's so hard for people to go vegan. And you're right. It's a lot of it is people of color that have to deal with that. And Joe is also correct, too. It's getting a little better, but there's still that struggle going on.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Absolutely, John.
How long have you been living in the South Central PA area?
I moved here in 1990. So it's been a while.
And how have you seen this area change as it relates to veganism in the past 30 some years?
Yeah. What an interesting question. This is very impressionistic. I don't have any data to back this up other than just my personal impression. But it seems like this culture overall here in Lancaster is very meat-focused. I remember doing the animal advocacy downtown in Lancaster. It was that group that has videos of slaughterhouses.
Oh, yeah, Anonymous.
Right. Anonymous. Yeah. I think at that point I was just talking to people as they watched the video, and a couple came up. They were roughly my age. And the guy said, he was looking at the slaughterhouse videos, and he said, "I love cows." And he said, "And I raise them for food." And I just, you know, my mind was blown that he could hold those two thoughts, you know, in his mind. He was familiar. A lot of people look away from those videos, but he was more than willing to just watch and then think that he loves those cows. And both of those attitudes were living peacefully together in his mind. And this is a very animal agriculture heavy culture here. Though now we have a vegan restaurant downtown and we have small movements away from that violence. And that's, I think, how all change starts, are those small movements. I was born in New England, but I lived all my life in the South. And I saw, you know, the power of tiny little movements against racial discrimination down South. I remember when people just started considering allowing Black people to live in the same apartment as white people. I mean, that was huge. And it was just one neighborhood in Virginia that we're going to try it, maybe. You know, but now look at what we have. And I guess all big cultural changes in favor of parts of society that are not powerful, I think they start with small efforts and then they get progressively bigger.
I agree with you. And also, it's funny that you mentioned how the culture around here is so meat-based. You're right. A lot of the Amish and Pennsylvania Dutch, that's like all they eat is meat and like different ways to eat meat. And they eat all of it. Like they don't spare any part of the animal. Like they're all about it. So that person that was talking to you is so conditioned that he made it so that he's okay with both things. And it's just such a hard thing to break. It's so hard. Mm-hmm. And I deal with it with my family. I mean, they're all Pennsylvania Dutch. Well, my dad's side, they're all Pennsylvania Dutch. So they're all like, "Oh, let's eat the grossest part of this animal and not think twice about it." And it's like, "Oh, come on, this is so bad." And then, you know, in the same breath, they're like, "Oh, look at the cute little animal. This is so cute." And it's like, geez,
specific to Amish, they believe they have dominion over
animals. Over the animals.
So once you're, if you grow up with that mindset, it's so hard. But they use them for everything. It's horrible when you see the workhorses, the carriage horses. They're in it every day. They don't think twice about it. And ironically, with this area too, we do have then access at least to fresh produce, fresh vegetables, and fruit. So I do always put that, at least we have that you know, whatever's in season, you can go out there and get it for yourself on roadside stands. It's tricky because then I feel like you're supporting some of these people who are also cultivating meat and dairy, but it is out there and it can be cheaper than your normal grocery store. So it's tricky.
And the more vegetables they sell, the more environmental impetus there is for them to
that's
produce more vegetables.
Excellent
and fruit.
Excellent point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's also part of the reason why there's almost a sense of urgency out here, where you may feel like, why would any vegan want to live out here? Well, if you're a vegan out here who's interested in spreading veganism, this is the place to do it, because you're having an opportunity to make a really big impact. No offense to Portland or any place like that with huge vegan populations. They're already picking up what people are putting down. Whereas out here, there's so much more opportunity to get people to start being more compassionate towards animals that even just a little bit of activism could potentially go a really, really long way out here. And like Mary said, it is getting better. There's vegan restaurants downtown. Every place usually has something on the menu that's vegan. Bigger community of people out here than there was. There's great volunteer opportunities with sanctuaries around. There's organizations like Animal Advocates to be a part of. There's a lot of social meetup groups and Facebook groups and things like that to get connected to. So it's not a terrible place for vegans out here, and there is still a lot for improvement as well.
Yeah, I agree.
So Mary, if anyone's listening out there who maybe just needs a little advice about how to either convert from vegetarianism to veganism or continue being vegan, what would you tell them?
Well, maybe a couple things. I guess people get motivated by different things. Different people have different ways of changing and motives for changing. And for me, the motivation was to stop the suffering of animals. That's my one and only motivation for being vegetarian and then vegan. But health is a big issue. I have a very dear friend who just got out of the hospital for cancer surgery, and his surgeon told him and told his wife that he's got to start eating a plant-based diet. So that might be another way to motivate yourself. That if are you concerned about being healthy? Are you concerned about getting cancer? Are you now, you know, many meats are known carcinogens now, according to the World Health Organization. So that might be another way for people to motivate themselves. I want to be healthy, and so I know I need to stop eating meat to accomplish that and eat a plant-based diet.
I know, Mary, for my parents, that was the main motivation, whereas I had been essentially raised from a toddler being vegetarian, and my parents had made that decision for me to end animal suffering, but they did not take it to the level of being vegan. We didn't. Yeah, we acknowledged there was factory farming, but it is a difficult struggle to make that full transition. So for us, it was those health reasons. And in my family, my mother suffered from swollen ankles. My father had back issues. Within months, essentially, those symptoms were diminished. They didn't have to consult a doctor. We did watch a documentary, Forks Over Knives. But seeing those stories, even if you don't have any doctor in your life telling you that, when those documentaries are out there, seeing these people suffering with certain conditions, maybe you can relate to them. It's astonishing the things they can help alleviate.
Mm-hmm. I remember talking to you about things you've done in your past and stuff. And I remember talking to you about how you are a therapist. And I was wondering, how long have you been doing that? And how has it impacted you so far as how you approach people as a vegan? Because, you know, veganism is always associated usually with being kind and compassionate. So how do you go about putting that into your work as well as your lifestyle?
That is a tough question for me, John. It's a tough question because I don't know that the work I do, it virtually has never come up.
Okay.
I started as a master's level therapist in 1972.
Oh my.
Wow.
And then I went back and got my doctorate in the late 70s. And you know, I've just been a therapist for decades. And the people that come to my office have got pressing issues, and it's my job to focus on those issues. And I don't remember one time that I have ever spoken about my eating and my belief system about animal. I don't think I've ever done that.
So do you kind of just shut off how you operate as a person and let them kind of just focus on themselves? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like, my job is to
basically just be a listen
to them and then create a plan for them to recover and then join with them in ongoing problem solving about how that's going to happen and then monitoring it and being available to them. If it were more, I tell my friends about, all my friends know this because it's just a central part of who I am. But I don't think any of my patients have ever known this, ever.
Well, I think that kind of relates back to what we were talking about before, where they still have all these other issues going on in their life. And before they start worrying about the animals and their well-being, they need to start worrying about themselves and make sure that they're in a good headspace and able to be in the right position to take that next step and expand their circle of compassion towards non-human animals and things like that. Mm-hmm. So even though I may have not specifically been talking about vegetarian or veganism, by removing one challenge in their life, whatever that is, you're removing one challenge for them that they can now allocate that time and energy towards going vegan or vegetarian.
That would be great. Yeah. That would be true icing on the cake.
Well, Mary, we're coming up on a half an hour, so I like to ask this question to everyone who's on the podcast. Hummus or guac?
Hummus or guac. Wow. I love both of them a lot. And I have to say, I'm about guac. I mean, maybe it's some kind of gender thing.
Maybe.
I eat a lot of hummus, and I love it, and it's good for you and delicious. And I eat more hummus than I eat guac because...
Same.
Yeah. But if I had a choice, always going down that guac highway.
What a delicious highway it is.
Oh, yeah.
I need to start screening our guests.
Hummus. Ask it at the top of the hour, Joe.
That's our show for today. So thank you everybody for listening. If you have any questions for Mary or any of us or any ideas for future episodes or want to be a guest or really just want to say hi, send us an email at bekindpodcast@gmail.com. So this is Joe. See you later, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Be Kind Podcast, presented by the Animal Advocates of South Central Pennsylvania.